Hi everyone, it's Nono here. Today, I bring you an insightful conversation with Mike Gabor, a good friend of mine whom I admire that I've been meaning to get into the show for a while. I love the attention he puts into everything he does and his peaceful and quieting worldview. Listening to him talk is soothing. I hope you enjoy learning how Mike fell in love with the ocean, his take on mindfulness, meditation, attention and love, his experiments with dark showers, the sensorium, a detailed commentary on the contents of his backpack, of which we'll share a video in the coming weeks, and much, much more. Without further ado, let's dive into Mike's mind.
I believe that attention is love. One of the things I like to do to keep things simple is to say, ¿por qué no los dos? That way you don't have to decide. You can have it all. You deserve it.
Hey, it's Mike Gabor. And this is Getting Simple.
Today, I want to introduce you to a really good friend of mine in Boston, Massachusetts. His name is Mike Gabor. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. Good to be here with you.
I've been meaning to have a conversation, a recorded conversation with Mike for a while now. I always enjoy his curiosities and tips and whatnot, and I wanted him to share them with me in depth and also with you, with all the listeners. One thing I'd like to let you know before we get started is that a few parts of this podcast are also going to be shared, or maybe are already shared, on the form of short videos on YouTube, and you can find the link on the episode notes. You can see, for example, the contents of Mike's backpack. Mike, I won't really introduce yourself because I think there's a lot of little details that we've never covered in real depth. So I would just start this interview by asking you to tell us about yourself.
Let's see, where should I start? I was born in Alexandria, Egypt, and moved over to the States when I was 7. Learned English, and then went to engineering school here in Boston. I worked at a few engineering firms, doing things from maglev technologies to medical imaging devices, and working for the FAA. Then I settled on a strategy consulting job with Accenture, and I've been doing it ever since.
When was that?
I started at Accenture in 2005.
Wow.
Yeah. Ever since, I've always tinkered on the side with all sorts of things, from building a small wooden boat to different startups, and I still maintain a few side hustles.
So one of the things that I expect that we can hear from you a bit later is about your love for the ocean and your experience there.
Absolutely. I feel more at home on the water or in the water than I do on land. So I try to spend as much time as I can out there.
And just in case I forget to bring it up later, there's a sort of a quote that you told me a couple weeks ago, is that, do everything I tell you while we're on the water, but ignore everything I say when we're in land.
Yeah, that's where my jurisdiction ends, as soon as we touch land.
I want to know a bit about some of the projects that you've been doing outside of your job, but could you talk a bit about the most exciting projects or the most interesting projects you've been doing?
Yes. So at Accenture, I've been working on a few data analytics projects. And we've built just recently what I like to call a stock ticker for technologies. It helps organizations invest or come up with their strategic focus for the year or the next 5 years. What we're able to do with that type of technology is proactively pivoting people away from waning or less market relevant technologies and skills before they're displaced by automation or other automated processes, and do not only do right by those people by making sure they have market relevant skills, but also save money along the way.
And what are some of those projects that you've been engaging with outside of your main job at Accenture?
One is a micro-lending organization by the name of Kononia, and the other is called the Wave Collaborative, which stands for Wider Access Virtual Expeditions.
What are they about?
So Kononia is a micro-lending organization primarily based in Egypt, run here from Boston, where we pair up MBAs and PhDs in business with inspired entrepreneurs back in Egypt. And we help enable their success through the community and a small loan that'll help them get started up. Then they're able to realize their full potential, leverage that investment in themselves and their families, and actually bring up their socioeconomic class by doing so. We have a network of these business professionals that help them design a solid business case that allows them to not only maintain their current return on investment, but increase it over time. And as they repay the loan, the money goes back into the community, ready to sponsor the next partner.
And what about Wave?
The Wave Collaborative is an initiative that my friend Naomi and I came up with. We work in partnership with local professors who are doing research out in the field. We found that scientific research was great for other scientists, but not so useful for the average person. Not everyone learns or engages through the scientific text. It's mainly for other scientists in that particular field. Other people learn visually or through audio, and the idea is to bring a cohort of interdisciplinary professionals, so other scientists, engineers, artists, musicians, storytellers, to be able to experience the expedition and share it with a wider audience through their respective mediums. Collaborating together, they're able to take what they've learned and what they want to pass along in a more accessible way to the wider public.
How long have you been working on this project with Naomi, and where can people find about it?
So if you go to waveboston.org, you'll be able to hear more about what we do, apply for our next expedition, or just keep in the loop. We started about 6 months ago with Professor Girgis from the Harvard Lab of Deep Oceanographic Research, and he's doing incredible things to explore the deep ocean, only 5% of which has been explored. It contains over 90% of all life on Earth. And what's really fascinating about this deep oceanographic research is it's just as difficult, if not more difficult, to go into the deep ocean and explore as it is to go up into space. Obviously, space is far more exciting and alluring because we look up at the stars and wonder how to reach them. While the ocean is just a giant mirror. You go sailing, go to the beach, surfing, you look down and you can't see beyond the waves. If you were just able to grab a pair of goggles or a scuba suit, you'd see the wonders of the underwater world. And it's quite mesmerizing to see and learn about. And over the last 15 years, I've been scuba diving all around the world, predominantly in the Red Sea. I've seen a tremendous amount of degradation. We've seen a tremendous amount of degradation in the coral life and as a result in the ocean life. And it's really sad to see. And I wish more people had the opportunity to go down there and explore and be blown away by all the things that scuba divers see every time they take the plunge. If not to help out, but just to appreciate it before it's all gone. So what we're planning to do with these virtual expeditions is take more people down into the depths of the ocean, opening that access to anyone who's willing to step into the room or into one of the resulting interactive or immersive experiences from these workshops and be able to appreciate What wonders lie below those waves?
Is this a virtual reality or?
Eventually, this will be virtual reality. That's our goal with Professor Girgis's lab. Our first step is to have a direct link to the Nautilus, which is a famous vessel that is exploring the deep ocean through manned and unmanned submarines. Originally, it was started by Jacques Cousteau as a dream, and now it's run by Bob Ballard, who's one of the most inspiring ocean explorers I've ever met. And through Professor Girgis's lab, we'll be able to directly link into the Nautilus and control it virtually from the Harvard lab. Professor Girgis will start the expedition by briefing the participants as if they were going to go on a deep sea mission on the ship and make them feel like they are there as one of the crew. I find that Professor Girgis is like the Neil deGrasse Tyson of the ocean. He's got an incredible voice, amazing infectious energy, and he's able to capture one's imagination and empower them to explore on their own, which is, I believe, exactly what the ocean needs. I hope one day he becomes the go-to orator for oceanographic research and one of those Planet Earth episodes.
What moves you to help start these kind of projects?
It's a good question. A few things. One, I'm not a traditional learner. I learned in many different ways, but I wasn't the best student, let's say. But I realized that further into college, there are many other ways to learn and experience the world around you. And I respect that. Rather than trying to force people into a particular way of learning by reading research papers, they can get inspired by the ways they know how to learn and experience the world around them. The other reason is I've always been upset with climate researchers for not communicating to us what was happening in a way we could understand and appreciate. All we've heard is there's a problem and we have very little time to react. And then recently I realized it's not their fault. They don't hold the responsibility to communicate with a wider audience. Their focus is to research and do the science. We've got to come together as a community and open up the conversation beyond the scientists who don't own the science, and they'd admit that themselves. Science belongs to all of us. It's the description and exploration of the world around us.
Really nice.
Thanks.
In more general terms, what role do the sea and traveling play in your life?
I first fell in love with the ocean when I started diving and started exploring a whole new world, as if I was flying in a medium unlike our own. Scuba diving allows you to become neutrally buoyant underwater and basically travel in any direction you want. You have X, Y, and Z. That's something we're not typically accustomed to. And unlike any zoo, any exhibit, you're able to sit with the animals face to face and just hang out and observe them in their natural habitat. And it's really special. I then fell in love with the ocean again when I started sailing. I actually started sailing after starting to build a wooden skiff out of mahogany and red cedar with my father and brother in our basement. And once I reached the chapter on how to build the sailing rig, I realized I don't know how to sail. So we stopped construction as a rowboat, ready for a mast and a rudder, came back to Boston and joined community boating here on the Charles River and learned how to sail. A few years later, I ended up in the Boston Harbor and beyond. Now we sail from Maine to New York, the Caribbean, you name it. And it's hard to imagine my life without it. One of the things I love most about sailing is being able to share the treasures of the ocean and the sunsets and the breeze and the disconnection from all things in the city. with my friends and loved ones. And sailing provides a captive venue, being able to prepare food, have an intimate space for you and your guests as you share some of the things you love most about the world. Similarly, with scuba diving, ever since I did my first dive, I've been trying to get everyone in my life underwater to appreciate all the things I love about underwater exploration. You really do feel like an explorer down there. And after trying for years, I realized the barrier to entry for scuba diving is just far too high. So I took up freediving, and it changed everything. Our freedive instructor, Rose, in the Yucatan Peninsula, told us on the first day that scuba diving is about looking out, freediving is about looking in. And freediving isn't just free of the tanks and then the encumbrances. You're able to really just put on a pair of goggles and hang out underwater with all the sea creatures you can find with nothing but your lungs as equipment. And it's a really special feeling. It's really freeing. Now with freediving, I have no problem badgering my friends to get underwater with this new superhuman strength that we all have. And is far more accessible than anything else I've experienced, including sailing, because it doesn't take much. It's all mind over matter. We are all able to hold our breaths for multiple minutes at a time with the right preparation and headspace. And as soon as you unlock that, you're able to exist underwater for quite a bit of time. And as soon as you lose that comfort, it stops working. Really interesting.
How many minutes can you hold your breath for?
On the first day of our free dive training, we did static exercises on land. And all of us within an hour and a half of training were able to hold our breaths for 2+ minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Doing swimming or just...
No, just sitting and meditating and relaxing. Underwater, you're moving around a bit, so that gets reduced to maybe 1.5 minutes at first. But master freedivers can go for 6-8 minutes, and they're really not held back. Once you understand the biological effects that happen when holding your breath, you can overcome them, because a lot of them are evolutionary to help make sure that your body is safe. But you can understand them and use them to your advantage.
I wanted to know if you can point out what are the things that make you keep going back to sailing. What are you missing in land, or what do you get out of sailing that you don't get your normal, well, quote unquote normal life?
You have your normal, I have mine. Sailing is exhilarating, first of all. When you're heeled over on a close haul, the wind in your hair, waves splashing on your face, or ocean water splashing on your face. It's absolutely one of the most exciting things. On a gorgeous day with the sun beating, it's hard to replicate. The ability to harness the power of nature to do your bidding, bringing 6 or 8 souls you have on board to a chosen destination of paradise, be it an island or just anchored off the side of a lighthouse, is just an incredible feeling. The awesome responsibility of a captain, balanced out by the joy of your crew and your ability to bring them to your destination of choice, is just really special.
Would there be something that you miss while you're sailing from land?
Not much. I would say the boat's never big enough to fit all the people you love. But besides that, I can't imagine anything else. I hope one day to have an entire flotilla or armada of boats. And if global warming takes its course, that might be more reality than a dream.
I would like to hear a bit more about sailing. Maybe you can point out some things that have been challenging or some specific moments where you felt uncomfortable, the fears or the unexpected moments.
Oh boy, there's plenty. out in the ocean, you are left with nothing but your wits and whatever you have on board to fix what goes wrong. And something always goes wrong. It could be the weather, an unexpected squall, or something on the ship that needs to be fixed to keep going. I always imagine that scene from Apollo 13, where something goes wrong on the spaceship. They're about to go behind the moon, lose contact with ground control, and something goes wrong. What are they to do? So they tell ground control, here's what broke, and we need this fixed to land again on Earth. And within the time it took to circumnavigate the moon, in that dark side of the moon where they have no connection with Earth, the engineers back in ground control sat at a conference room table, one of which brought a big cardboard box and dumped it right in the middle. And he said, we need to fix this with what's in this box. That's how I feel when I'm on the boat and something goes wrong. You become MacGyver. You've got to figure out what to do with the things you have. That's a really fun, but terrifying, but empowering experience every time. Now, everything on the boat has broken or needed repair at one point or another. And it's always fun tinkering, but very frustrating when it doesn't work. So we've been in a few situations where things go wrong and we figure it out. One Arabic phrase I love is itsarraf, which means figure it out. I think it should be the national motto of Egypt because something always goes wrong with your plans or what you're trying to accomplish. And there aren't any instruction manuals. There are no rules to be spoken of. So you need to tsarraf. And we always do. You asked about some scary moments on the ocean. When I first started sailing, my girlfriend at the time invited me to sail with her father from Connecticut to the British Virgin Islands. It was supposed to be a 7-day sail. It ended up being 10. We got caught in the tail end of a hurricane, and the captain was confident. I had no idea what I was getting into. I had just started sailing on the Charles River. We get out there, and it's the dead of winter in New England, and the waves were enormous. The rain was insatiable, and it was difficult to do anything. The boat, if you can imagine, was tipped or heeled 45 degrees at all times, getting pummeled by waves that were 13, 16 feet high, just towering over the boat. And if you didn't hit them just right, they would fill the entire 50-foot boat with ocean water. And that is not a fun experience for anyone, especially for the guy on the wheel, which was usually me when it happened. I learned in that trip the awesome power of nature, how it needs to be respected and prepared as much as possible, but most importantly, to trust the crew on board and rely on each other when something goes wrong. We've been in plenty other storms, usually not by choice. A friend of ours, David Bangsberg, would typically send us an email whenever he saw a storm approaching Boston. And for some reason, we always joined him. It's good preparation for the real thing. One of those storms was on the way back from Acadia, Maine. And we caught a fairly big storm off the coast of Gloucester, where the perfect storm took place, if you remember that movie or book. It was an awesome storm in a very unfortunate location. But we made it through. I wouldn't sign up to do it again, but I'm glad I was there and I learned what I was capable of and what the boat is capable of, as long as you stay on it.
I know you are a well-traveled person, and I believe that you can't keep up or keep track of all the countries you've been. What's the role of travel in your life?
I am able to keep track now that my sister-in-law, Margaret, bought me a beautiful map that I can pin into a corkboard where I've been. So I appreciate that because she knows how difficult it is for me to remember anything. traveling for me is more about understanding and experiencing other cultures than my own personal enjoyment. I typically try to stay away from the touristy things, but sometimes you just got to do them. The way I prefer to travel is to stay in a location for a month or more to really get a feel of what it's like to live there behind the scenes, behind the tourist tracks. That's where I can really get an appreciation of how people live and how they interact with each other in the world.
And you work remotely, right?
I do work virtually, yeah. I really do to travel with purpose. Either visiting a friend, going to a wedding, as we did in Zakynthos for Spiros and Sophie, or for one of the nonprofits that I've been working on. And then enjoy myself during the process, but not traveling frivolously, just for the sake of travel, just for the sake of saying I went somewhere or ate a particular kind of food or climbed a wall. I'm trying to keep my travel with purpose.
From what I've seen, when you travel, you manage to fully focus on traveling, disconnect as much as possible from work and immerse yourself in whatever it is that you're experiencing.
Yeah, I do my best. I think the traditional definition of meditation is just to sit and focus on your breath. I believe, and I'm sure plenty others and other practices also believe, that it goes beyond that. You can meditate on anything. You can meditate on a conversation with a particular person. You can meditate on a task or an experience. And I think it's important to focus with purpose, whatever it is you're doing. And that way you can truly meditate on whomever you're with or whatever task at hand. That could be anything from washing your hands to sailing.
So what you're referring to is the concept of mindfulness.
Yeah.
Being mindful about anything that you do, might be, as you said, sailing or eating some apple or anything you do.
Absolutely. I think multitasking, as we remember it to be some incredible feat that some people are able to accomplish, is a big joke. I think if you're working on two or three things, each of them at best get 50 to 30% of the quality and attention that you can give.
I always like to raise the feeling that you would get whenever you cannot do something that you can do today and you don't pay attention to. That is a powerful thought that you can, I don't know, imagine there are normal conditions that you can be, even be in jail, for instance, at some point in your life, and you cannot just walk on the street. But there are a lot of things that can happen that are a lot worse, that you cannot walk, that you cannot run, that you cannot see. And that brings you back to today and then say, really, try to enjoy even the mundane, boring, well, quote unquote boring, right? The things that shouldn't be boring.
Green Day has this awesome song lyric. It goes, if you're bored, then you're boring. And I always like that. It turns around the concept of entertain me to how can I use my mind and energy to entertain myself or the people around me. I believe that attention is love, with the three equal signs. Three dash equal signs is love. When you're giving someone your full attention and you're empathizing with them, I think you are giving them your love. It doesn't need to be even a person. It could be anything that you're giving your full attention to. You're giving your full love to. And in that way, you're able to connect with that thing in a deeper level. So if you're giving someone your half attention, let's say by texting or wandering off, you're not giving them the full capacity of your love or attention. Mr. Rogers had this beautiful quote in his wallet, carried around all his life. It was from a social worker, and it said, it's impossible not to fall in love with someone after you've heard their story. I always thought that was special. I'm notoriously bad at meditation. Only recently was I able to truly meditate in my own mind and explore that space. Ever since, I've been trying to find ways to make my meditation practice more accessible. I've come up with a few things that really work for me. One of which is this hammock that you see hanging in my living room. Anytime I can hook it up, hop in, put an eye mask on. I really enjoy this eye mask by the name of Mindfold, which actually allows you to open your eyes, which is very relaxing, very, very immersive.
And we'll talk about more of your gear.
Sure.
Later.
Yeah, I always have that in my backpack. It's the closest, one of the closest ways I can simulate a sensory deprivation tank in my own home. The second way is what I like to call dark showers. Blocking out all the ambient light in your bathroom before you take a shower. And you basically know the routine, what's going on. You know what your shower looks like. You can always practice with a nightlight or just by closing your eyes and opening them when you need to. As long as you label your shampoo and conditioner, you're able to go through your entire routine without seeing anything. Usually, you have your eyes closed as soon as you put shampoo on to avoid getting shampoo in your eyes. So, for the most part, you're already closing your eyes and taking a dark shower. But this just really allows you to be immersed in that space. The sound of the water is almost like white noise. The feeling of the water on your skin is, again, almost like the white noise sensation on your skin. And with nothing to look at, not unlike someone who's lost their vision later on in life, their other senses kick in and become magnified. And it's a really incredible phenomena that you can take advantage of by just turning off certain senses and being able to really access your deep thoughts or just relax. It's a really effective method. I really enjoy it. And now every time I take a shower, it's a dark shower.
How long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing this for about a year now, I believe. I didn't do it right away. I slowly immersed myself in this darkness by using a nightlight or doing it intermittently. But now I'm very comfortable there. I really love it. I've actually never experienced a sensory deprivation tank. I've always wanted to. But I recognize the power and its ability to allow you to have almost an out-of-body experience. And this allows me to do so in the comfort of my own home at any time, either through hammock meditations or dark showers.
What would be the steps when you're going to do hammock meditation?
It's fairly simple. I hop in the hammock. I have water nearby because it's hard to get in and out. I put on my eye mask and usually either classical music. I prefer piano. And the waterfall in my aquarium serves as great ambient noise. Very relaxing and how much I love water. So it's just perfect to have that.
So you mentioned your eye mask before, and I'm really curious to learn more about the contents of your backpack.
I would be happy to take you through all the treasures here. And I have this bag everywhere I go. I used to give my girlfriends all the things I needed to bring, my water bottle, an extra layer, and everything else I couldn't fit in my pockets. But now I have everything I need with me at all times. I grew up in the Boy Scouts, and one of their mottos is always be prepared. And anything I need to always be prepared ends up in this backpack.
A bit of a survivalist motto.
Yeah.
Do you want to go through?
Yeah, let's do it. Let me take you on a tour of all the contents of this beautiful backpack I have here. I think it's a Swedish company. I can't pronounce them, but their logo is a fox.
Fjällkraven.
That's it. That's the one.
Fjällkraven.
Fjällkraven. Fjällkraven. All right, you ready? Open it up. I'm just going to dump it all out. I'll take you through the more interesting components. I have a portable battery here, because you never know when you'll need it. Some spray-on liquid bandage, just in case someone gets hurt. I have here what we like to call a Kaufman layer. A Kaufman layer is a layer that you have on you that you probably don't need, but it's nice to have the option. Just the psychological comfort of having that extra layer actually makes you more warm or not even need to think about it. This is always on me just in case I feel like I may get cold. I have here what's branded as the Boof. So it can serve as a hat or a scarf or a turtleneck, anything you need. And it's very light and thin and easy to carry around.
And I would point out that's a Spanish brand.
Oh.
They're out of Catalonia or Barcelona, I think.
Gotta love those Spaniards. Absolutely. A Leatherman multi-tool. It's got a screwdriver, knives, a saw, everything you need just in case you need it. A headlamp with a red light, very important, so you don't destroy your or others' night vision. Some beard balm. This is a Grave Before Shave. My favorite scent or flavor is the Gentleman's Blend. We got a zombie Abe Lincoln on the front here. Nice. A cover for my bag, just in case it rains. I mean, it needs the torrential downpour to get through. A flask that my brother gave me on his wedding day after making the best man speech. And I just have some of my own homemade whiskey in here. I have a cask and I'm able to put in all sorts of things like ginger or honey and let it sit. And it's very effective. Nice for sharing. And to share it, my good friend Jude found this at something, I think it's called Free JP, where they just share wonderful things. And it has one of my favorite animals, my spirit animal, an octopus on the cover there. And let me open it up. You're going to love this. Turns into a little cup.
Wow, that's awesome.
Anytime you need it.
So just for people who are listening the audio podcast, it looks like a little compass, but then it opens into a small metal glass.
Yeah, it's a cool little collapsible metal cup. I have a charger, a car charger for my phone, and a wall charger. This is a really important item. It's high fidelity earplugs. These are invaluable. When you're at a concert or just a very loud place, they don't degrade the sound quality, but they just bring it down a few decibels and eliminates the unsafe frequencies.
What are those? Are those a special brand or any?
They're called Vibes. I think they were on Shark Tank.
Nice. Can you show that to the camera?
Here we go. I have a camping pillow in case you need to take a nap.
Is it inflatable? Or?
Yeah, it's inflatable. So one of the most important items in here is this mindful mask I mentioned before that has the volume, which allows you to open your eyes and see nothing but complete darkness. It's a sensory deprivation device on the go. Deck of cards to play with new friends or some of your best pals. Lots of snacks. I always keep a few granola bars on hand just in case hunger hits. Few other things here. We've got some homemade hand sanitizer. I really hate the way hand sanitizer, that alcohol smells, and especially when you're about to eat. You get really intimate with your hands. So this is just basically boiled water, tea tree oil, which is an antibacterial, natural, and then whatever scents you'd like to add. So this one, I believe, is peppermint and citrus. Very nice. We've got a few dude wipes. Now, this is incredibly important when you're on the go and you need a sanitary wipe after you go. These are always good to have when you don't have a bidet. I've got these tea tree oil toothpicks. They're very tasty and great for sharing. one of my best friends in the entire world turned me on to these. He always keeps them on and passes them around after every meal. They're quite enjoyable and also antibacterial, so it disinfects your mouth on the way, which is really nice.
I don't think there's anything else in here.
And that's it. Cool.
Thanks for sharing the contents of your backpack. I have to say, I've tried the eye mask and it's amazing. I also tried some other type of ear plugs and they work amazingly, though they are a bit, they harm your ear a bit. So I don't know if those are too big for me or what, but those are definitely something that I've used for planes and for other moments where you need to cancel some noise.
Yeah, you got to protect your ears. There are two more things in the side pockets. One is a pair of sunglasses. And the other, probably the most important thing in this bag besides my water bottle, I always keep water on me, is this notebook. This notebook has a few wonderful features that I've integrated into one simple device. The first is this beautiful pen from Muji. They do a great job with their pens. The second is this locator device. It's called a Tile, and it allows me to find things I typically lose most of the time in my own apartment. And the third thing that's really wonderful about this notebook is I've adapted this Japanese indexing note-taking approach, which allows you to basically do a control find on any topic that you want to locate in your notes. It was always one of the most frustrating things about taking handwritten notes is how do you find a particular topic to refer back to it? There is no find function, but now there is. So in the back of this notebook is the index, as you would find it in a book. And each line is dedicated to a particular subject matter. I have to-do, reflections, some of my side hustles, sailing, and gimmicks, etc. So each particular line corresponds to coloring of just the edge of the page. So when you color that in, you can just thumb through and find on line 4, I want to find that particular subject matter, and boom, there it is. Very effective find feature in a very basic medium.
What's the make of the notebook?
I believe this is a Moleskin. They're so popular, I was trying to find an alternative, but they just make a good solid product. One other feature of this notebook is rather than lines or a grid, I'm an engineer, so I love the structure of a grid, but hate how confining it is. So this is a dot style notebook. So it's a grid, but with dots at each, if you can imagine each intersection of the grid being a very faint dot. So it allows you to line up your text or your drawings in some sort of structure, but you don't really even see or mind it because it's so faint. So it's the best of both worlds, a blank page with semi-lines, semi-grid. So I carry around this notebook for a few reasons. One, I have a terrible memory, and I found that just writing things down made them very easy to retain and reflect on. Two, I've got way too much going on in my life, and it helps to sit down, meditate, keep track, and capture all the crazy thoughts that I have in one place where I can reference and share them.
Thanks for sharing the contents of your backpack and your notebook.
Let me tell you a little bit about the sensorium. This is a concept that Sam Hinks, or Samulus, taught me. A good friend who recently completed his PhD on brain-computer interfaces. His research was about detecting and potentially in the future influencing, which is a bit scary, mind states. And he was able to do so by attaching a probe on one's temple and another one on a person's forehead. He found that those two places on your head were anti-correlated with each other, meaning when one is activated, the other is dormant and vice versa. Now, what was really interesting is he was able to correlate these signals to your endogenous versus exogenous systems. So your exogenous is when you are focused on the outside world, endogenous when you're focused on your inner thoughts or feelings. What's really cool is most people can focus on one or the other. People who meditate can control which they focus on. But people who are master meditators are able to activate both at the same time, which is a really powerful skill. Because if you can imagine, you can not only reflect on the things in front of you, but your own thoughts. The sensorium is basically your mind's recreation of the world around you and within you. Your brain receives all sorts of signals from your senses. Your eyeballs are connected with nerves and connected to a particular part of your brain. And those nerves send electric signals to your brain, and your brain interprets them and paints what you're seeing. So when it does so, it's able to paint a picture of the stool in front of you based on the light that's hitting your eye. Now, what's cool about this is if you can imagine all your other senses recreating the experience of the world around you in your mind's eye, and that is your sensorium, your sensory auditorium, your brain's perception of what's happening around you. It's a really cool concept. There's a few scientists who've done quite a bit of research on this. I don't remember their names offhand, but I'm happy to hand them over to you when I research.
Yeah, we can put them on the show notes.
Great. The other very fascinating thing about the sensorium is your brain is constantly making predictions and calculations. And it is most efficient when it's able to predict something rather than perceive it. For instance, your periphery vision is unable to see color, but your brain paints them in based on what context clues it has. When you look at a door or a table, you don't think, hey, this is a table. Your brain is able to recognize it right away and identify it. So when something breaks that predictive mold that your brain is expecting something, it becomes a very rich experience. And those are the ones that are most memorable. That's why certain times when you're afraid or outside of your element, you remember every detail. It feels like the world is almost slowing down because your brain is processing every single input that it can to understand this new phenomena that has been presented. So this sensorium is designed to recreate all of the inputs around you and predict as much as it can so it can save energy. This really interesting experiment that an optometrist conducted on a girl who was blind. And he mounted a camera on her head and had her place a pad, an electrode pad, in her mouth on the top of her palate, touching her tongue. And this pad had a bunch of electrodes that would correspond to the image or the image that this camera was taking in. So at first, she just felt some tingling, and for weeks, didn't really result in much. One day, she came back to an appointment at the doctor's office. He took a pencil and waved it in front of her field of vision. And she was shocked that she saw a line going past, actually saw it, going past her field of vision. Her brain was able to interpret that grid and recreate it as an image in her mind's eye, her sensorium. And with time, she was able to see more and more, and I believe eventually see in color, which is absolutely fascinating. Your brain has this incredible capacity to interpret inputs, no matter where they are, and recreate the world around you as extra senses. And there's all sorts of other biohacking that people do with magnets to show them the compass heading or a Wi-Fi signal. But it's fun experimentation.
I would love to hear about what you've talked to me as the multiplier effect.
Yeah, I've been watching and all these documentaries and learning about people who I believe really maximize their impact on the world through the resources around them. I would put Steve Jobs, Walt Disney, Oprah, Koons, Warhol, all in this category. And when you look at what they were able to accomplish just by sharing their vision and bringing together people who believe and support that vision to maximize their outputs, it's really astounding. And I think they figured this out. They figured out that Disney figured out that if he filled an office with some of the most talented animators of his time, he didn't really need to be that good of an artist. He just needed to have the vision of where Disney cartoons should go, how to elicit emotion through a cartoon, how to tell a story through a medium that was rarely explored. With Koons and Warhol, I think they're very similar. I think Koons is the new Warhol. They were able to democratize art by creating it in mass quantities. And they're very controversial figures because of that. And you may feel as you wish with them, but not unlike Steve Jobs, they were able to perfect a process and scale it and be able to impact more of the world. And you can think what you want. I have my feelings about Steve Jobs and Koons, but they did figure out that formula and they were able to maximize their impact and really take advantage of this multiplier effect where they can empower people around them to create things that can be mass produced to impact more of the world around them. One of the things I really strive for in any project I work on is how can this impact the world at scale? And will it live on? Is it self-sustaining beyond me? And if it has the potential to do one or ideally both of those things, it's something I can really put my heart and soul into or my full attention.
So before we wrap up, let's do a series of fast questions to learn a bit more about yourself.
All right, let's do it.
How does your day-to-day look like?
I don't have a very good routine. I make eggs, have a cup of coffee, and take a dark shower.
Do you consider your life simple?
I strive for simplicity, but I have a very difficult time accomplishing it, especially a tough time packing light, as you can tell from my backpack.
What things make your day more complex?
At times, there are fire drills, I like to call them, at work, where all hands on deck and we need to get something accomplished very quickly for an executive audience. I find that I have so many people around me in Boston and elsewhere that I want to spend as much time with them as possible. So that can be challenging because there's only 7 days a week.
Do you have any daily habits of less than half an hour that have a big impact in your life?
I'd say one of the most impactful things is 15, even 5 minutes of meditation. It's incredibly rejuvenating and allows me to get a lot off my mind. I have a habit with meditation where I do pause, but I allow my mind to do what it likes. and switch back and forth. And I'm able to process a lot of my thoughts and ideas and feelings in that time, in a very short amount of time.
How does your commute look like?
I have a great commute. I walk from my bedroom to my desk, which is also in my home.
Do you do any exercise?
Yeah. I have a rowing machine that I love, and I try to do yoga once a week. I was an avid climber, and I'd really like to get back into it. It's a great way to exercise in a very natural way while figuring out problems. That's actually what they call each one of the routes, because it's this puzzle that you get to solve with your body.
In what formats do you consume media? Like reading books, audiobooks, podcasts, video, news?
I've really gotten into audiobooks lately. They allow you to access all the great things that you could read while you're on the move. And I rarely find the time, unless I'm on vacation, to crack open a book. So it's a nice way to continue to learn without sitting down and doing nothing but that.
Is there anything particular about how you deal with email?
I try to check my email once, at most twice a day, because it is a very time-consuming activity and an insidious one, where you think it's mindless, you're just clicking through, but it's actually occupying your attention quite a bit. I also try to chunk out my day into half-hour slots where I'm doing nothing but that one particular task that's on my calendar and giving it all my time, attention, and love. I'm pretty sure I have ADD, so I'm very easily distracted. To combat that, I have a few playlists that really help me get in the zone. I have an endogenous playlist and an exogenous playlist, both without any lyrics, just music. And that, depending on what type of task, I pick up one or the other.
What's your relationship with social media?
Your time and attention are very special. These platforms are purposefully addictive, not unlike cigarettes or alcohol or coffee. Anything that you become addicted to and that you yearn for can impact your life in a negative way. So I try to mitigate all of my addictions and keep them in the right portions. I'm very rarely on Facebook. I told you guys to reach me there, but I'll get it eventually. I rarely go on Instagram now. I'm trying to really keep an arm's length from any one of these platforms that can quickly suck you in.
When do you get your best ideas?
I would say two ways. One is through silent meditation, and the other is through collaboration. Sitting and talking and ideating with my colleagues or friends, I tend to think out loud unless I'm in complete silence. The two ways I disconnect are when I'm camping and I have no signal, so I don't have a choice, or when I'm sailing, where it requires your full attention and it doesn't give you much room to focus on anything but keeping your course.
If you ever get bored, how do you deal with boredom?
Sometimes when I'm in front of my computer, it's YouTube, but I'm trying to mitigate that too. It's a habit where you think you're learning or being entertained and you're just spinning your wheels and wasting time. When I am bored, I like to reach out to friends and just give them a phone call. Nobody ever uses their phone as a phone to make calls anymore. And they're really good at it still.
What do you think is a healthy relationship with technology?
I'm really striving to minimize my time in front of a screen. I think we're inundated at work, when we want to entertain ourselves, or just communicating via text message. And we're constantly brought back to our phones or our computers. They're in our pockets and we can do so much with them. Every app has a purpose. So it's really easy to get caught up in that rabbit hole. I try to stay conscious of how many times I look at my phone and my computer, and then as soon as they fulfill their purpose, be it work or communicating with friends, I do simple things to distance myself, such as taking the phone and placing it upside down on the table while with someone.
How do you define success?
Anything that allows you to learn and grow or impact the world around you in a positive way is a success, in my mind. Even if you fail, you've succeeded in learning if you're able to reflect and course correct for the next time.
Is there anything you say to yourself every morning?
Here we go.
If I tell you to think of a successful person, who's the first person who comes to mind?
I would have to say my father. My father has an infinite capacity for empathy. I don't think he even appreciates or recognizes it, but he's a brilliant man who wants nothing but the comfort and joy of the people around him, be it at church or in his home or anywhere he goes.
If you could send one sentence to the world, what would you say?
It may not be good for you, but it's good for something.
What will you tell your 20 or 30-year-old self?
For better or for worse, nothing is permanent. Every 7 years, all the cells in your body regenerate. That's why some allergies come and go in cycles of 7 years. And essentially, you're a new person.
What's the best way for people to connect with you or get in touch with you?
You can always find me on Facebook. I think I'm on there as just Mike Gabor. And reach out, and I'm happy to chat about any of the things I talked about or more that you may be curious about or want to get involved with.
Would you have any book recommendations?
Absolutely. One of my favorite books is called The Tao of Poo. It's Taoism described through the stories of Winnie the Pooh. A very deep subject that's brought to you in a very light, accessible way. And I think some of the lessons in there are incredible. It changes the way I look at the world and at myself. Some of the others I would recommend are The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, if you like sci-fi. And I think it's one of the best sci-fi novels ever written. And this man is hilarious. He'll definitely make you laugh out loud and appreciate science fiction in a whole new way. Another book I'd recommend is Get Real, Get Gone, How to Become a Modern Sea Gypsy and Sail Away Forever. Another book I'd recommend is The 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss. And the opening chapter was something that really impacted me. He talks about how to be efficient when you exercise and how you may only require 4 push-ups to get the maximum benefit out of that particular workout. Anything beyond 4 is a waste of energy because it only took those 4 to maximize your muscle mass. And he compares it to boiling water, as water boils at 100 centigrade. If you increase the amount of energy or heat, you've already reached the boiling point, so you're wasting energy. I reflected on this and realized that it doesn't just stop at exercising. It's also how I feel about feelings. You may feel guilty about something you've done wrong, and there is a purpose behind that. You may need to apologize, reflect, or course correct. As soon as you've addressed all those things, you may continue to feel guilty, but it no longer serves a purpose. It's actually negatively impacting your life or your emotional health. So just boil to the right temperature and then relax. Looking at my bookcase here, and I would recommend The Life of Pi. If you've seen the movie, it's garbage compared to the book. Another is Lullaby by Chuck Palahniuk. And he talks about the assault of sound pollution, which is a really fun topic. Another book I'd really like to recommend is called Forest Bathing, and it was given to me by a dear friend, Mira Riyad, who started an orphanage called Littlest Lamb in Egypt. I'm very proud of her and all the wonderful work she's doing. And then lastly, I would recommend Principles by Ray Dalio. He was a mentor to folks like Bill Gates and Arianna Huffington. He has incredible life lessons that he's condensed into one book.
Anything you would recommend to maybe listen as podcast form or audiobooks or any other media publications?
So some of the podcasts I'd recommend are Radiolab, This American Life, Surprisingly Awesome, where they take seemingly mundane topics and describe how exciting they actually are when you get down into the details. Where Should I Begin by Esther Perel is a really interesting podcast done by a psychiatrist who records her sessions and reflects on them and publishes them. And all of her sessions are with couples. So it's a really fascinating look into relationships.
I think I'm going to listen to that one.
You're going to love it. One of the audiobooks or books I would recommend is The Mind Illuminated, where he breaks down the types of meditation and how to incorporate a meditative practice into your life.
We're going to add something that Mike has been working on for the past year or 2 years. Can you spell it before we continue?
Sure. It's PEQUOD, PQUOD. The inspiration for the app was two things. One, I know a lot of blind sailors in Boston, and they're incredible sailors. And I've had the opportunity to sail with them and be a seeing guide on their races on the river and on the harbor. And it's just really magnificent to see them work and feel the ocean and the boat in a way that I've never been able to do, except for when I teach how to sail, I actually blindfold people because it works. Someone will be all over the place and then you throw a blindfold on and boop, they're right on track. It's really cool to see. And just because as soon as you take away one sense, everything else gets heightened because your brain's like, what's going on? Let me tap into all the other things. My balance, the wind, the sounds of the sail, the sounds of the waves, all of those things. So you become much more attuned to your surroundings and nature and able to feel what's happening and how to react. And it's much more natural. The second inspiration, whenever I'm on the water, similar to when you're driving, you've got a navigation app in front of you and you're staring at a screen. When you're out in the ocean, it's such a shame to be staring at a screen when you're surrounded by such beauty. So I thought, what if we just take away that screen? And we found that blind sailors would benefit the most immediately. But this app was built with blind sailors for all sailors. So supporting blind sailors' ability to autonomously navigate the water and helping the rest of us keep our eyes on the water while our ears on Pequod. That's the tagline I came up with. I don't know what you think about it.
Well, it's good. It's good. If I use it blindfolded, how does the app guide you, or what does the app provide?
So I wouldn't suggest you blindfold yourself right away. That's just how I teach people how to sail and feel the boat. But normally, if you were to put the app on, it would just audibly describe your surroundings. It would tell you if there's a hazard nearby or approaching. A hazard is something under the water that could hit the bottom of the boat, or the boat would hit it. And water is very concealing. It's like a giant mirror. So that's why we don't feel bad throwing our trash in the water historically, because it just goes away. But the reality is there's a lot going on under there. And it's very evident when you're in a boat trying to navigate that you need to understand the topography of the water beneath you. There's no lane lines in the ocean. There's channel markers that kind of help you understand where you are in relevance to land and where you're headed. But you have to navigate in a whole new way, not by GPS alone, but with all sorts of tools and visual aids that you have at your disposal. This app would just audibly tell you what's going on, what sort of buoys or markers on the water, lighthouses. If there's a hazard approaching or land approaching, it'll give you an idea of where it is in relevance to you, the angle, the distance, whatever you decide, and how often you'd like to be notified. So you ultimately wouldn't need to look at a screen. You could just draw a picture of your surroundings the same way a blind person needs to do by a verbal description of their surroundings from a sighted guide on a boat.
Where can people download this app?
We are in development. This is still in prototype mode. We're testing with blind sailing teams in Boston. And we hope to launch by the beginning of next season. So hopefully May, June, we'll have something on the App Store. Pequod Navigation, I imagine it'll be called, something like that. But this is just something I'm excited about. I'd love to get more people involved if they're equally as excited. There's lots of work to do. It's going to a really good cause. Blind sailors are incredible athletes, and I'd love to support them however we can. And the blind racing teams around the world really are impressive. Our team in here in Boston is planning to do a Bermuda race next season is quite a feat, and whatever we can do to support them, I'd love to be in their corner.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks Mike, and looking forward to seeing the application.
Yeah, thank you. Good to see you.
So this was one more episode of the Getting Simple podcast, this time with myself, Nono Martinez Alonso, and Mike Gabor. Thanks so much for your time, Mike.
It's been an honor and a privilege, as always.
I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks so much for your time, attention, or love. We'll see you next time.
They call me El Capitan Barba Negra.